You have questions, we have answers. This is Jane Muller.
And this is Ken Muller. Welcome to our show, All About Real Estate with Ken and Jane. Today, we're going to talk about appraisals. And we have with us as our special guest, Randy Cohen, who's a certified appraiser. Randy, welcome to our show.
Thanks for having me.
Give us your bio, how you became an appraiser.
The easy way to explain it is my father-in-law was in the appraisal business, and he wasn't originally in the appraisal business either. And what happened was he was an engineer, and he was one of these guys who lost his job, and he was doing appraising part-time on the weekends, and when he lost his job, he decided to do it full-time. And the crazy part about it, he was actually working for a cousin of mine who was an appraiser up in North Jersey. So he did that for a bunch of years, and he just eventually accumulated some clients, got very busy, and he convinced me to help him part-time. So I started doing it part-time, and just a kind of funny thing happened along the way. I kind of really liked the business, and I also kind of realized that he was going to retire it one day, and it was a different business back then. And I can expand upon that later, but it was a business, different business back then. And I figured, well, if you're retiring, I'm going to take over this business. This is a great job. And I kind of liked it better than what I was doing. Mm-hmm. And that's how I got into it and been doing it probably now for about 20 years.
Okay, great. Yeah. So appraisals are such an important part in the process of home buying. I guess you could say it's critical because under most circumstances, you can't buy a house unless it appraises or it's subject to the negotiation other than this market is a little bit crazy because people are waiving the appraisals. So why don't you, let's talk about first off, what are the training and credentials you need to become a certified appraiser so you can hold your shingle out and do this work?
So it's been a long time since I had to go through training. And from what I understand, the rules have changed a little bit. So I'm not totally up to date on it, to be honest with you. But from what I understand, you still obviously have to still be an apprentice, which means that you have to get a training license, and then you have to work hours under a licensed appraiser. Mm-hmm. And you have to put a certain amount of hours in. Now, I don't know off the top of my head what those number of hours are. And then now, from what I understand, you also have to have a college degree.
Okay.
Where years ago, you didn't have to have a college degree, but I think the hours have also gone up. I had it easy because I worked for my father-in-law. So of course, college degree wasn't a problem, but it was great because my father-in-law was busy. He had hired me because he was busy, and I really blew through the hours very quickly. So I became a licensed appraiser probably within a year. I think it's a little bit more difficult these days, and that's a whole other subject too. And then about a year and a half after that, I bumped my license up to a certified appraiser. I just kind of recognized that certain lenders wanted the higher licensing.
Now, what is the difference between an appraiser and a certified appraiser? Is there a test involved in?
Oh, yeah, there's definitely tests.
Okay.
There's always a test.
You won't go anywhere without tests. Always a test. Whether it be an attorney, accountant, or whatever.
There are basically four licenses in New Jersey. There's general certified, certified, licensed, and apprentice. Mm-hmm. Apprentice is obviously easy. That's just how you start. General certified is the highest level. You generally tend to find a lot of the commercial appraisers are general certified appraisers. They're general certified people doing residential as well. Then they're certified. And things like FHA, high-level loans like, you know, jumbo-type loans, a lot of times the lenders will only want a certified appraiser to do those. Mm-hmm. And then there's regular licensed appraisers and then apprentice.
Apprentice, okay.
Right.
Yeah. Right. What about for normal, for conventional loan homes? Do they require a certified or depends on the lender?
It really does depend on the lender. Most lenders will take a licensed appraiser as well as a certified appraiser, as well as a general certified appraiser.
Right.
But again, depending on their loan exposure, they may require a higher license level to do those higher loans.
Right.
Absolutely.
And like with a lot of fields, I'm sure there's specialty. There's some appraisers that stick to commercial, some stick to residential, some may stick to land or, you know, and there's all probably subdivisions within commercial. You might have the ones that specialize in warehouse and industrial versus office and retail. So I assume there's a variety of.
There are some unique things. I mean, I never really got into it. I have done a lot of high-end homes. I mean, I've done like $7 million homes down the shore. I've done one or two farms out in Delaware County, Delaware Township out in Hunterdon County. But there are people that will just do land appraisals. There are people that will just do, let's say, retro type appraisals. Let's see, there are people that will just do mixed use properties. Like if you go down to New Brunswick and you have like a storefront and you have an apartment above it, that's considered mixed use. So, yeah, there are some specialties where people will just do those kind of things.
I did have some experience in the past. They ordered appraisal, and later on, the buyer, for some reasons, they no longer qualified for a commercial, conventional loan. Mm-hmm. They have to flip to FHA. Yes. At the end, they have to get a different appraiser come because the other appraiser wasn't qualified or certified for the FHA or VA loan.
Right. So VA is a totally different thing, and you've got to get on their panel, and that's actually very hard to get onto. And a lot of the guys who've been doing VA for a long time are kind of set in their ways. I tried years ago. I wasn't that interested in doing it, but I have been FHA licensed for or approved for almost my entire career. You do have to – I don't want to say it's a test or anything, but you do have to reapply or register yourself with HUD every single year. So at the beginning of this year, I have to go on their website and re-enter all my credentials. And as long as you haven't done anything wrong, you know, you stay on their panel. But if you do something wrong, HUD will kick you off.
Absolutely.
And yes, there are some appraisers out there that do not want to do FHA loans.
Right. Now, from the technical standpoint, are there different criteria that an FHA or a VA lender may require, that you use in the evaluation of the appraisal versus a conventional loan, or are you basically sticking to the same technical approach you would regardless of the lender involved?
So the inspection is a little bit different for HUD, for FHA. The basic way you approach, meaning sales comparison approach, cost approach, all those things, income approach if you're doing a small income property, those are all the same. The report doesn't change. It's just things in the report that HUD wants and things that HUD wants you to look at the property. Just the biggest, easiest example to explain this is that HUD, or FHA, is mostly concerned these days with health and safety of the occupants of the house. They are concerned that there's nothing in the house that's not operational, not functional, or something that could hurt the occupants. Kitchen cabinets and appliances need to be working. There cannot be more than three steps without a handrail. Those kind of things. Peeling paint is a biggie in homes that are built before 1978 because of the potential of lead-based paint. You know, you guys know that.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. You guys know that. And it goes to the exterior as well. Peeling decks or something that they'll make you paint as
So the biggest thing that I try to impress on people about HUD rules these days is that HUD's definition is defective wood surfaces. And like you said, Ken, it's anywhere. It could be inside the house or outside the house. I did a house just the other day in Ewing, and it was the house was sitting on top of a hill, and there was a little parking space off the road, and there was these wood steps that led up to the house. All the wood steps were deteriorating, had peeling paint. The entire thing had to be scraped, repainted. And the wood that was falling apart needed to be replaced.
And in New Jersey, it becomes challenging in the winter months because we had a similar situation
in
Mattawan where it happened in the wintertime. So we had to be had to watch the weather forecast was our best friend, and coordinating the contractors to come in and get the painting done was challenging
because
it happens in January and December and you need to repaint it, you've got to do what you do.
And in fact, right, I understand why they have that rule to protect for the house built before 1978. But in fact, I think the deck was newer. The deck was really built only 80s or 90s. But regardless, the house age was before. Right. So we have to get that repainted. It's just peeling paint.
Right.
And we have to get it repainted. As I can mention, we really stick to the weather because we have to certain weather that day, just lunchtime, go in there, get a contractor painted so the appraiser can come back and re-inspect it so we can close. That was like a January, February. That was really rough.
Good stuff. Now, I'll tell you what I do as an appraiser, and I can't tell you that every appraiser does this. My personal opinion is it's wrong if they don't do it. But if HUD has a rule that if a home built before 1978 has peeling paint, then there's the potential that that's lead-based paint and it's hazardous. If you have a buyer who's not doing a FHA loan and they're doing a regular conventional loan and the house was built in 1950 and it's got peeling paint. Mm-hmm. How does it not make it still potentially hazardous?
Yes.
Just because the loan changed. Now, HUD requires you to fix it. Mm-hmm. People often come back to the appraiser and say, oh, you're making me fix it. No.
No.
I'm not making you fix anything. I'm just telling you in my report that HUD requires you to fix it. So I extend that to all appraisals that I do. If I go to a house that was built mm-hmm. in, you know, pre-1978 and it's got peeling paint, it doesn't matter to me whether it's a HUD loan or not. Mm-hmm. If peeling paint is there, that's potentially lead-based. That's a potential hazard.
Yep.
I will note that on the report. Now, if it's not FHA, I can't require that to be corrected.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I can only point it out to the lender.
Yeah.
So my favorite saying about what appraisers do is we observe and we report.
Report. Mm-hmm.
So
yes.
That's why when they come back and say, you're making me fix anything, I'm like, oh, I'm making you fix anything.
Right.
That's right. Just you point out in the conventional loan, you alert the lender and obviously the buyer paid for the report. They get a copy of the report. They can see it, what needs to be done.
Right.
Obviously, even though they may not be able to ask seller to do it before closing, but for their own family and the health part,
yes.
After the closing, when spring comes, they should get that done. Just
right.
for their family safety.
Right.
Yes, absolutely.
Exactly.
Also, the realtor yeah. contract of sale, the pre-printed contract of sale, gives the buyer a right to do a lead inspection. But I'll tell you, 99.9% of the time, buyers just bypass that right, even though it's in the pre-printed contract of sale.
Yes.
Along with the home inspection,
mm-hmm.
part of it includes the right to do the lead paint testing, if applicable for homes built. You know, they can hire somebody to go there with an XRF
yep.
or paint samples, but it's very rarely ever done because I guess for whatever reason, buyers just don't bother doing it.
I think it's really area related, Ken, because in our area, Central Jersey, especially East Brunswick, you don't have many house, you know, have that issue. But if you go into a certain area, for example, New Brunswick, I mean, a lot of older homes, right? They
sure.
may have a more severe, so the people may be, you know, pretty much more careful, and the buyer, you know, the inspector and the agent will, a lawyer would recommend the buyer to do so. Yeah. Thank you very much. And
then, what I try to tell realtors when I meet realtors is mm-hmm. that when you are taking listing appointments,
yes,
you know, go around the house.
Absolutely.
And that's, I know what, you do, Jane.
Yeah,
but,
I do.
You know,
yes.
But go around the house and look for this stuff and kind of try to preempt it if you could.
Exactly.
We always do. We always give the seller a checklist of things to get the home ready.
Absolutely.
And, you know,
That's really a great point. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Calling all buyers looking for a great commercial opportunity. Check out this 4,000 square foot home with permitted medical use located on a main thoroughfare in East Brunswick with ample parking in the front and rear. The seller is willing to fund the buyer's township application to expand and modify the approval base on buyer's desired end use. For more information on this property, please contact Ken at 908-337-9448. 908-337-9448. Attention to developers and contractors. Over 3 acres of land located at the heart of East Brunswick is up for sale. Great location and lots of potential. For further details, please contact Ken at 908-337-9448. You are listening to All About Real Estate with Ken and Jay Muller on 93.5 FM, 1450 AM, Fox Sports, New Jersey. Now let's get back to the show.
Welcome back to our show. We're joined today by Randy Cohen, who's a certified appraiser. So, Randy, we've been talking about the credentials, and then we got kind of into the whole details of the appraisal and the lead paint. Let's go back and talk about the situations when an appraisal would be needed, from the obvious buyer, somebody buying a home, but there are other situations where there's a need for an appraisal to be done.
So most lenders will order an appraisal. There are different kinds of appraisals. There are full interior appraisals, and then there are drive-by appraisals. Again, this is a personal opinion about what you're comfortable doing. I am very uncomfortable putting a value on something that I haven't seen. And that means I want to see the inside and the outside. Mm-hmm. So I'm not a big fan of drive-by appraisals because you know the old story, don't judge a book by its cover.
That's right.
Can't begin to tell you how many houses I've driven up to and I'm like, oh, my God, this is beautiful. And you walk inside and it's like, whoa, what happened to the inside? Or it's the reverse where you walk up and you say, oh, my God, this house is a disaster. And you walk in and it's beautiful. They've redone everything. And you go, did you guys forget about the outside? So I'm very uncomfortable putting a value on something that I can't see. Today, there is an influx of what's called hybrid appraisals that are being promoted by not lenders, but I believe AMCs. Those are appraisal management companies. Those are the buffers between the lender and the appraiser. Mm-hmm. 90% of the loans, I guess, in this country are still, you know, sold Fannie, Freddie, or insured by HUD. Mm-hmm. If you are doing that, if you are a lender and you're doing that, you cannot hire the appraiser directly. You must go through an appraisal management company. There are still some lenders that don't sell to Fannie, don't sell to Freddie, don't insure through HUD, and those lenders can order appraisals directly. I have a few of those clients, and they can hire directly. But those lenders basically, or some of those lenders and some of those AMCs are trying to push what's called hybrid appraisals. They're basically desktop appraisals where the appraiser gets to sit in his office, use the computer, the MLS systems, tax records, and produce a report based on data that he can get from the internet. Mm-hmm. There's also an effort by these AMCs to send a third party person, meaning just a, they like to call it an inspector, but I just call it a person going and taking pictures.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, my attitude is like, well, I don't need you to go take pictures because when I go inspect a house, I'm looking at 50 times more things than the guy who's just taking pictures is looking at. So that's why I want to do the inspection. So there's hybrid appraisals. During COVID, there were desktop appraisals because HUD and Fannie and Freddie and the lenders didn't want us going to homes. Those have been sunsetted. We're really not doing those anymore. Mm-hmm. And then there are waivers. You can get an appraisal waiver for a house you're purchasing. I bought a house a year and a half ago. I didn't need an appraisal on the house that I bought. But I think a lot of it's got to do with the lender and who you are as a buyer, meaning how much money you're putting down, what your credit rating is, and how much the lender already knows about, let's say, that market area or that area.
Yeah.
In other words, they have things called automated valuation models. Mm-hmm. They're kind of like Zillow, but they're better.
Better. I would think so.
Zillow's way off. I'm not a big fan of Zillow.
Yes.
So, but they're like Zillow. The way Zillow produces a value based on data, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, lenders, they have their own automated valuation models. And if they can come up with a number that they're relatively comfortable with, and again, based on your credit rating and based on how much money you're putting down, they could issue an appraisal waiver and you don't have the house appraised at all.
Yeah, that's a lot of misunderstanding in today's market. It's very competitive, as you know. Every house have multiple offer. So buyer want to their offer to be picked by the seller. So a lot of buyer offer to waive the appraisal. I have to explain to the seller what buyer offering is not a waived appraisal because we don't have the right, nobody had the right except the lender themselves to go through the process. So what it really waived is the contingency.
Yes.
Say, for example, you bought a house 500 and at the end appraised 400, you have to either reduce your down payment or come up with more money to offset $100,000 difference in appraisal value. So that's something a lot of time the seller said, oh, Jane, they waived appraisal. Why did you make appointment for the appraisal appointment? I said, no, it's a contingency.
Right.
It's not appraisal. Yeah. But definitely, as you mentioned, we saw a lot of good quality buyers. They have very high down payment. Right. They have excellent credit and meet all the lender, each individual lender's criteria. They go through the internal process. They get approved for the appraisal. So waiver, completely waiver, absolutely, yes.
And Randy, why do you think, getting back to the hybrid appraisals, what do you think, do you think it's due to the volume, due to the craziness and the volume demand that lenders are going or reverting to the hybrid in some cases instead of the actual full-blown appraisal?
Not sure, but I think that's a possibility, although the hybrids were really starting to come out even pre-pandemic. So yeah, I started seeing those come out before the pandemic hit. And then it seemed as though when the pandemic hit, they weren't really pushing them because they were really more pushing just the you know, you don't need to go in the house and do the appraisal because of COVID kind of a thing.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So that was kind of evolved into
it. It was a little different because you were still producing almost the same report. The hybrid appraisal is not the same as a regular uniform residential appraisal report that we're doing for banks these days. It's a totally different form that they've created. And again, I'm personally uncomfortable with those.
Yes.
Right. So with that, let's get into what the traditional appraisal encompasses. If you're doing the full-blown appraisal, could you briefly explain the steps involved in that
process? I like to break down appraisals in terms of three parts. And it's funny because when I go to inspections, meaning appraisal inspections, not home inspections, I call it an inspection because I'm still walking around the house, but it's an appraisal inspection. That's only really one-third of the job. And people are like, oh, my God, that's it. And I'm like, no. I've got two other parts that I have to do.
Right.
So when I get an assignment from either a lender or an appraisal management company, the first thing I do is I do a complete research of that property. I am pulling tax records, history of the house, how many times it's been sold, listings, anything that I could find. I'll even go on places like Zillow and Google. I'll Google the street address. I will try to find out as much as I can about that home. I want to try to know more about it than even the homeowner knows about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I do that. And then, of course, I pull all my comps. I do all the research on pulling the comps, which means I need to find out about the subject house, and then I need to see what it's going to compare to. So I'm doing all of that. That's one third of the job before I've even stepped foot outside my office and gone to the property.
Mm-hmm.
And then once I get to the property, I then do that appraisal inspection, and then I also will drive the neighborhood and I will shoot photos of comps and do all that. That's two-thirds of the job. And then the last part is actually writing the appraisal report and putting it all together.
And interpreting the data, which is subject to some interpretation. It's not like a math where, you know, 1 + 1 is 2 and everybody's going to always derive that result.
I always tell people, it's not a computation.
Yeah, and let's get in, and the selection of the comps can alter the appraisal value up or downward, and that can be very challenging because let's say you have a colonial in a neighborhood, but that's the only colonial, so you may have to go outside the neighborhood to get a comparable colonial. So that can be challenging, finding the like house in the same neighborhood, or you might find, you know, that's where it gets very...
That comes down to almost more appraiser opinion as to what they should do. Do you go further back in time to find the same similar home while staying in the same neighborhood, or should you go to a competing neighborhood and find a more recent comp and do that? It can go back and forth. Yeah. And whatever you decide to do as an appraiser, you need to explain that in the report to the lender to say, look, I have a colonial here. It's 4 bedrooms, 2.5 baths, 2-car garage, and there are no sales in the past 6 months in this neighborhood.
Right.
So therefore, I have chosen to go to the adjacent neighborhood, which I consider to be a competing neighborhood that a buyer might consider one or the other neighborhoods.
Yeah.
And because I could find the same colonial house, same age, same size, same bedrooms, bathrooms, I will use that as a comp. But you do need to explain that you did that. Or you could say, look, I'm going to go back in time. I'm going to go back 6 to 12 months, and I will find a comp in the same neighborhood, and I will tell the lender, look, there's been none in the past 6 months, so therefore I went back 9 months and chose one. And then again, the appraiser could decide whether or not to make a time adjustment.
Yes, like this market.
That's right, because especially the last 2 years, you'd have to make an incremental increase because of the post-COVID.
Especially
the
in this past year,
surge.
Especially in this past year, it's becoming more popular because if you look back 7 to 12 months at the median sale prices and you look at it now, it's been different.
Yes, anywhere between 7% to 10% increase in the last.
Lenders want
months.
You to go back and look at the contract date of those older sales and say, well, okay, this was under contract in this particular date, and let's look at the market data and see what the market has gone up, and are you making an adjustment for the difference in time?
Yeah,
something we really didn't do many years ago, or some appraisers did, but now it's definitely more prevalent.
Yes.
Right. So let's talk about the challenges that appraisers face with unique properties. Like, for example, let's say you have that colonial, that 4-bedroom, 2.5-bath colonial, but it's on a very busy street and it's the only colonial on a busy street in, let's say, the town. Then how do you make the downward adjustment? I'll make it really difficult for you. So how do you make the downward adjustment if you really can't find a comparable colonial in size that has that same external fact pattern, you know, being on a busy road? It's just the rest of the
What I try to do is, if I do think that the through street or the busy road is a factor, and I often think it is, mm-hmm. I will actually go back and do a custom search of any home that is sold maybe on that same street. Mm-hmm. Or on another similar street,
yes.
Like another similar busy. Mm-hmm. And I'll see to try to find as close a match as I can. Mm-hmm. And I'll just adjust for the difference in bathrooms or size, yeah, or garages. But if I could find a similar age home that's maybe similar in size and or maybe similar in bedrooms, but it's also on a busy through street, let's say locally around here, we're dealing with a town in East Brunswick, say
Riders Lane
yeah, versus Milltown Road or something.
Right.
Well, you know, you could argue whether which street is busier, but they're both busy through streets. So if I could find another sale, let's say on Riders when my subject's on Milltown, I might consider that because at least it's a similar location, yeah, and then I will adjust for the other differences.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's a very good approach, yes.
That's absolutely right. So,
yeah, I mean, I had quite a few house in the past, right? They may have the high tension wire at the back, so it's very hard to put a real number on that, because that's really depends on how buyers and as well as appraisal, you know, appraisers, because some people will see that definitely there's an issue. I mean, I sold one house, particularly in Monroe, and the one of the buyer raised a point about that high tension wire. So my client obviously was very worried because they're very health conscious. So we had a technician came in, measure it. So actually was fine,
yeah,
you know, from the boundary was fine. But on the other hand, you know, it really depends how the buyer and then perceive it. So the contract price reflect that, and also the appraiser. Did yeah, they think it's a big problem, or is, you know, whether they deduct
there's
that?
There's a famous saying, perception is reality. And we had a similar case in East
correct,
Brunswick that was yeah, a beautiful house built in 2006, 4,000 square feet, that dramatically sold at a
yeah,
at a significantly lower price because of the, unfortunately, there was a high tension wires in very close proximity running
yeah,
through the backyard.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, people have strong opinions about it. And there is actually data that's been run that shows that there's no difference, you know, in terms of
yeah,
the whole health thing.
Yeah.
But I also am fond of an expression that there are certain things that cannot be measured for mm-hmm, value.
Yes.
But right, they affect marketability.
Yes, absolutely.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. So, give you an example, an in-ground pool. Not everybody wants an in-ground pool.
That's right.
So, you know, you take – if you have an in-ground pool, it's not that your pool has less value. It's just you're taking yourself out of a market of people that don't want a pool.
Yes.
Right.
But if the pool's an in-ground pool, it's an attachment to the ground. It does have value. It may not have equal value to what it cost you to put the pool in, but it still has value. So there's value and there's marketability. And sometimes,
now everybody want a pool.
But now post-COVID, everybody wants a pool.
Everybody want a pool.
It used to be maybe 50-50 prior to COVID, but now with the COVID pandemic,
yeah,
a lot of people are congregating at home, and that's part of the home entertainment, yeah, having that in-ground pool.
Yes, absolutely.
But the high tension wire thing is sometimes comes down to a bit of a marketability and aesthetic thing. We could talk about solar and the aesthetic of solar on a house.
Yes.
That some mm-hmm, people don't want the panels on their house because they don't like the way it looks.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And also possible maintenance about that. If they're leaking, and what are we going to do? Yeah, it seems like we ran out of time. It's really great having you, and we'll have to have you back again.
I would love to do it again.
Yeah, thanks so much for coming to our show, and we'll see everyone next week.
Thank you. Have a good weekend.